This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another gloomy episode of the Doxcast. I'm your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the Havenish Rich Early.
Very good, Josh.
That didn't work very well. I was so busy getting all of the pieces put together because of our technical difficulties, I didn't bother to come up with a good adjective for you today. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I dropped the ball.
Let's hit the ground running. Josh has actually arranged a fantastic podcast today, and we'll tell you a little bit how it developed. But just real quick, the Doxcast hits iTunes and our website every Monday morning. Episodes can range from anything from comics to board games to our community to, you know, whatever movie reviews, whatever we're in the mood for. Yeah, rants. Yeah. So today we have got game designers with us. So we got a really special guest today.
Yeah, so some of you out there may have heard of a little game called Gloomhaven. If you haven't, you've been living under a rock. This is quite literally the biggest game to hit. I believe it came out in 2017. But we have with us today Isaac Childress and Marcel.
Trumbull. You can do it.
Marcel Svetechka.
How's that?
He's not good. Talking.
Is that okay, good, Marcel?
I was worried there. He didn't respond right away. I think he's busy planning his revenge now.
Yeah,
going to write another scenario for us. Hey guys, how are you doing?
Doing good.
Yep, doing well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's really awesome to be able to sit down and chat with you. Gloomhaven has been one of my group's go-to games here. Over the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 months at least, and just been having a blast with it. So it's really cool to actually be able to get you on here and get a chance to talk to you. So, let's go ahead and get to know you guys a little bit better. So Isaac, we'll start with you. Give us a little bit of your history, where people might know you from. Obviously, we mentioned Gloomhaven, but you've designed a few other games. So go ahead and give us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So just general, yeah. I own Cephalofair Games, which, published Gloomhaven. I also designed it. I pretty much design all the games that Cephalofair publishes up until the Forgotten Circles expansion to Gloomhaven. I think Marcel can talk about his involvement in that, but so my first game was Forge War, which was a pretty heavy Euro, released in 2014 or maybe 15, I forget. Mm-hmm. And then Gloomhaven, and then Founders of Gloomhaven was released earlier this year.
What made you want to make Euro games? Like, what did you just get up one morning and say, I want to make Euro games?
I was always a big fan of Euro games as long as I knew they existed. Started out with Settlers of Catan, like most people probably.
that is one of the gateways, yes.
Yeah, maybe like 10, 15 years ago. And then sort of I discovered Board Game Geek maybe about 10 years ago. And that really is sort of kicked off my descent into the hobby, because, you know, you can just get a lot of information out of there, and, you know, what are the best games to, you know, start playing with. And so got into Agricola and Power Grid and Puerto Rico and things like that. And then, I pretty much loved everything I came across. So when I first decided to start designing games, that was where I went, because that's what I loved.
So we all played those games, right, Josh?
And
so on and so forth. But only one of us sitting here designed Gloomhaven. So what what you
I'm
know,
feeling called out here.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Josh, what have you done?
Yeah,
but I mean,
I
but it's
this podcast.
Yeah, it seems like a simple question, but the thing is, you know, like, and from your perspective, it's something you can just do, and everybody's got different skills. But you somehow, you know, I like Settlers of Catan. Boom! I made Gloomhaven. Right? I mean, how does that happen exactly? does that make sense?
Well, there's a lot of background in Dungeons and Dragons as well. I've been playing that since high school, I guess, which was a long time ago. And yeah, I don't know. in some sense, I feel like not anybody could have designed Gloomhaven, but I am sort of like surprised that it took so long to sort of shake up the dungeon crawl formats, you know, sort of add more Euro elements to it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was sort of like an obvious decision I made to, you know, like, cause everybody, not everybody, but like dungeon crawls, there's a huge audience for that type of game. Cause it's just so exciting and thematic, you know, running around a dungeon killing monsters. But, you know, up until that point, you know, it was just like a bunch of dice rolls and there weren't really all that many interesting decisions. And so just sort of combining the sort of Euro ideals to the dungeon crawl, I think is really the big innovation of Gloomhaven. And I don't know, to me, it seems like an obvious thing to do.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I mean, that's like you said, it does seem kind of weird now that it exists. It does seem kind of weird that it took so long to get that particular experience in a box, but it's just funny how there was a time before Gloomhaven. Like, it doesn't seem like it now, maybe that's because I'm slowly wading through the content with my group, and it seems like we've been playing forever, but have forever left to go, which is fantastic. Because getting that much content out of a box is always a great thing, but yeah, you know, one thing that people note when playing Gloomhaven, and I've kind of felt it myself, is that it feels almost as if you're taking a video game RPG experience and putting it into a board game format. You know, in the way that you can go and you can attempt something, and if you fail, it's okay. You know, you can try it again. It's not like there's permadeath or anything like that. Were there any kind of influences in terms of video game style play, or was it all just the pieces kind of fit together this way, and that's the way that made sense? Was there anything like that?
Yeah, I guess I forgot to mention that too. But yeah, there's a lot of video game influence as well. I grew up on video games. That was my main / only form of entertainment when I was a kid, mainly playing RPGs, you know, Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest / Dragon Warrior, things like that. So, you know, turn-based RPGs, so... Yeah, it's sort of been my obsession my entire life. So yeah, that definitely had some influence as well.
Excellent. Yeah, I have many fond memories of playing RPGs with my brother because I could remember all of the characters and all the locations and stuff. So he would actually play the game, and I would tell him where to go and, you know, who to visit. So playing this kind of brings some of that nostalgia back for me, which is really nice. Let's go ahead and we'll shift over to Marcel real quick and get to know you a little bit as well, because we don't want you to sit there and fall asleep while we're the rest of us are talking. So, Marcel, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the hobby and what brings you to Forgotten Circles.
I started quite young as a board gamer. The first board game I ever owned was Heroescape, so I had affinity to Hex Grid in a sense. And I worked my way up to more complex games over the time, like Descent, a lot of different other dungeon crawlers like Mage Knight, into heavy Euro territory. And I got quite the big collection, and I always designed my own ideas for games. like working within a setting and just enriching it with my own ideas, with my own creativity. Like, for instance, in my youth, I designed like custom creations also for Heroescape, and later on for Descent, I wrote a whole campaign. And for Mage Knight and Civilization, I did whole modules that are for the community to enjoy, and they're still live in Board Game Geek and can be looked up. And then I started to work on my own game design, and it was about the time before I met Isaac. And I've seen an advert for Gloomhaven and just asked him if he would be interested in having some help on the project. And I talked about my experience and my different modules I created for different games. And yeah, I put a lot of effort into them because I'm kind of a perfectionist and trying to get things right as best as possible. Yeah, so I started to work with him as a playtester in Gloomhaven, and started to design some scenarios for him as well in the base game. And from there, we kept in touch, worked on the game to make it the final version that it is now. And afterwards, we met last year in Essen for the first time, and we discussed the future of the game. And I have to kind of thank Richard Rado for that. He suggested that a fan maybe in the future might do a small box just to test out the waters, how that would go. And yeah, we come from that to the idea to creating new content for the big box expansion of Gloomhaven. And then from there, the discussion kind of led to the idea to make an own small box expansion on my own. And that is Forgotten Circles. And a year later, now it's done.
There's that perfectionist showing up there. Well, that's awesome. And I suppose, so Marcel, you live in Austria. So, of course, your experience with board games is probably a bit different than a lot of ours here in the States, where, like you said, you grew up with it. I didn't realize that these amazing board games existed until at least high school. And it was probably another 8 or 10 years after that before I finally realized that there was more than just the one. It's like I played Robo Rally at a party with some friends. I'm like, this is really cool. And it never occurred to me that there was a whole world of other games until a friend of mine got Dominion. And then from there, it was just a big, you know, it was just downhill all the way. I'm a horrible addict now.
Yeah, I started with board games, but I had a phase for about 10 years where I heavily delved into trading card games with a friend, because we were both into them and experienced like every trading card game there is. And from there, we migrated over the time to board games and just tried them out together and branched out. And I think Descent First Edition was my next big purchase that we heavily enjoyed, and from there, my collection is now over 200 games, probably.
And you spend most of your time playing Gloomhaven, so. Oh, that's great. We'll keep kind of flopping back around, back and forth a little bit here. So, Isaac, let's check back in with you and take us a little bit through the process of creating Cephalofair games. So you created, I'm sorry, I'm totally blanking on the first game, Forge Wars.
Yeah.
And at what point was it during that time, or was it during Gloomhaven, the design and creation of Gloomhaven, that you really felt the need to create the Cephalofair games label and work under that, and how did that process kind of go?
It was when I was sort of working on Forge War and that whole Kickstarter. It was just sort of totally flying blind at the beginning. You know, I had this idea for a game, and I thought it'd be cool to just throw it up on Kickstarter and see what happens. So I'm sort of in the process of designing it and commissioning artwork and some graphic design and stuff like that. And I think I was researching like European fulfillments, you know, like shipping copies to Europe and how I might go about doing that. And I sort of ran across Jamie Stegmaier's blog, you know, Kickstarter Lessons, which, you know, if you're at all involved with Kickstarter, you're probably familiar with. And, you know, it's just this gold mine of information about running Kickstarters and everything that you need to do to do that. And so I just sort of went through the whole thing and started going through this checklist and doing everything he told me to do. And one of those things was make a company. And so that's how that started. You know, just to have this official, you know, organization or whatever to sort of operate under, you know, just to give yourself more legitimacy, I guess. So I started Suffle Affair Games and put up my first game on Kickstarter, and that did pretty well. Yeah. And so I just went from there. I think around the time that was coming out, I was graduating from grad school here at Purdue in Lafayette, Indiana. And, you know, I sort of had this decision whether to go into like the board game business like full time or try to get a job in the real world. and I decided, you know, just to give it a year or so, you know, trying to see if I get this board game thing to work. And that's when I designed Gloomhaven, and it ended up working out.
Well, we're glad you made that choice, because so far it's worked out pretty well, it seems.
Well, and Gloomhaven is a very unique product on the market. At the same time, something like 5,000 games were released last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's sort of fascinating to think about how does any one game find its audience? How does Gloomhaven get itself out there while, you know, 3,500 of those games don't succeed to get themselves out there? You know, it's fascinating right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things I had in mind designing Gloomhaven, because I sort of experienced that with Forge War. I made this game. I think it's a really great game. But, you know, it just sort of was released and then everyone forgot about it, you know, which is what happens to the vast majority of games in this business. And so when I was designing Gloomhaven, I really wanted to just make something that people couldn't ignore. And that's sort of one of the reasons why it became what it became.
Well, yeah, it's definitely an ambitious project. I mean, I'm looking at the box right now. Our copy is sitting on the floor of the media room here at the store. And it's just, it really catches your attention. You can't look away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, even just the box of it stands out. And then once you start unpacking all the material in there. So, of course, I'm behind on a lot of things, so I really didn't get in on the Kickstarter. But how much of it was kind of in there from the start, and how much did you go into stretch goals and things like that? Did you start off saying, all right, here's the game, and it's you know, a fairly big thing and, you know, whatever, but when it got so much traction, were you able to add more stuff in? How did that go?
Yeah, there were some stretch goal additions. I think we added, well, I was planning for some stretch goals ahead of time. So I think initially I was planning on like 15 characters. A lot of those got, you know, quote unquote unlocked through stretch goals, but I was expecting them to be unlocked anyway. But there were two additional characters that I wasn't planning on, which ended up being the other two starting characters, the Mind Thief and the Kraghart. But I mean, so it wasn't really necessarily stretch goals that sort of made this monstrosity. I don't know. It was more just my poor planning in a sense. Like I didn't, when I first started that Kickstarter, like I didn't realize how big it was going to be. Like I had sort of a vague concept, or, you know, more than vague, but I had a concept of like what all I wanted to put in the game, but I didn't really have a clear idea of like physically what that was going to look like. Mm. You know, so it's like, yeah, I want like all these scenarios and all these character classes. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to fit it in a box, not realizing, like, in the end how big that box would be.
Well, it turns out it's one of the best values in board gaming because it's about $6.50 per pound or something like that. I think a friend figured out. So,
yeah.
So yeah. So kind of piggybacking onto my own question there. A lot of like the monsters and things there, did a lot of those come about like, oh, I want to have a scenario like this, and in order to have this, I need to have sun demons. That'd be really cool. Or did you create the idea of sun demons and then find ways to work them in? Or I'm guessing there's some back and forth and on all that, but I've always been kind of curious where it starts in terms of, did you design like a bunch of monsters and then figure out where to put them into the world, or did the world kind of create itself as you were writing it?
I'd say it's mostly the latter. Like the world sort of created itself as I was working on it. I remember, the creation process for the campaign was mostly just me like creating the campaign for like my core playtesting group, like as we were playing through it. So yeah, I would just sort of come up with ideas. I mean, I had sort of, it was sort of like half that and then half sort of like planning ahead, planning all these different story threads that they could explore. But then a lot of it was sort of on the fly. So it was sort of like back and forth between those two, I guess.
You also did a very nice thing involving the community in creating scenarios and putting their ideas to good use and integrate them with Kickstarter stretch goals and design contests, and also picking up the best ideas and let these guys work on more ideas. Like, for instance, me or Matthew Summers, who designed a lot of the side scenarios and also suggested like bosses and items and like new monsters.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, there was some initiatives during the Kickstarter campaign where we had contests and like design contests, so you could submit scenarios and I would pick the best ones and include them in the game. And then sort of as part of that, I created some new monsters as well. I think the need for most of the new monsters was from Marcel's scenarios, actually. Like the Harrower Infestors and the Savas, like the powerful Savas mages. And then, yeah, we also included some more bosses based on some other people's scenarios. One of them was Marcel's, and then one was somebody else's.
Yeah, the Betrayer from... and the Colorless.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. So yeah, let's shift back over to you then, Marcel. And how does it work coming in? So you've been part of Gloomhaven for quite some time, doing playtesting and working on it that way. But getting to come in and kind of write your own scenarios here and an entire expansion. What sort of process did you follow there? Was there a lot of ideas that didn't get into the original box that you wanted to bring forth, or was this a chance to kind of go a little bit crazier? Like, a lot of times in a base game, you'll have the more base scenarios and things, base classes and stuff like that. Obviously, Gloomhaven has a lot of content, so there's a lot of room to play and come up with some interesting and unique things there. But was Forgotten Circles or is Forgotten Circles a chance for you to branch out even more and kind of test the limits and break things in new ways? Or
The answer should be kind of twofold. One, for the base game, I had like different quest lines that were retirement goals, and then I designed an idea around that quests and fleshed it out with some story and some scenario that fit to the theme, and that was much more in line with the original ideas that I knew about Gloomhaven at the time. And for Forgotten Circles, I started to gather ideas about the backstory and the lore of Gloomhaven after fully played it through, and I was interested in exploring these background ideas and this lore and this rich history of Gloomhaven that's like untapped potential, and Forgotten Circuits goes much into detail about that. And for this scenario design, I also tried to work with a bit different style of scenario. I've gone through forums and just read ideas from people that would they like to see in the expansion, and I tried to put my own spin to it and work on like scenarios that feature riddles, scenarios that feature your own choices and your choices that matter and have consequences and lead to different outcomes depending on your own actions, stuff like that. So, Forgotten Circuits also is more narrative-driven and focus about the diviner and her story and how it links together with everything that happens at the end of the Gloomhaven story, and kind of tries to find a conclusion to it.
Yeah, and Marcel's ideas about sort of how to construct the scenarios, you know, to create, yeah, more choices and like more surprises and riddles and things like that is a definite like evolution, I think, of the Gloomhaven system, and definitely be using that going forward. I mean, you can see it already sort of in the new community campaign that just started. But also, you know, in any expansions in the future, it's a lot more work to lay it out and get everything right. But I think the benefits of doing it are tremendous. I think people are going to be really blown away by Forgotten Circuits.
Thanks.
So I had another question, but I got to ask this now since you just said that. Isaac, were there any scenarios or anything that Marcel tried to put in Forgotten Circuits that you had to axe? Like, did you read through it and go, nope, you can't do this. That guy, no, you can't have that.
Yeah, that happened a little bit. Marcel really wanted to have a scenario that was PvP, essentially, so there's the scenario where you could play it and you would go out and find like another group of people who are playing Gloomhaven and you would like bring them over to your house and you would like play against them.
Oh my goodness.
I tried to implement PvP like a long time ago in the initial Kickstarter, and I realized like fairly quickly that it wasn't going to work. There were just like too many weird things that popped up. Decided to axe that. But then he still wanted to basically like have a bunch of monsters that were just decks of player cards that you essentially just like played the top two cards from just like a random deck, like the Krag card or something, and then tried to like interpret like how that monster would actually act. And there were just so many like rules edge cases that popped up with just weird combinations of cards that like I just didn't want that headache in the forums of answering all those questions, so had to axe that too.
And to be fair, you also axed the scenario that I kind of wanted to tie in and the campaign that we did on the promotional week before the reveal. Wrote a scenario, but yeah, we can look it up online. So
yeah, it's totally
it will probably be on available online later as well.
Yeah,
awesome. Well, speaking of really great scenarios, I do have to bring this up because I'm still just floored that you did this for us. But we met Marcel on our Extra Life stream. So if you're not familiar with Extra Life, it's a 24-hour or 25-hour, in our case, thanks Daylight Savings Time, marathon where we played games and raised money for Sanford Children's Hospital, Children's Miracle Network. And we started off the day with Gloomhaven and just posted on BoardGameGeek that we were playing. And this guy just happened in the chat, and he was really nice and giving us some help on some rules and things we were getting wrong. And turns out he is the guy who designed the expansion. As we were getting through the day, he eventually came back because, of course, being in Austria, the time difference meant that he was well awake when we were hitting like the 4 or 5 a.m. time and all of us were getting really loopy. and he suggested we play more Gloomhaven to end the night, but by that point we had our full team of six people, so we're like, ah, well, that's a bummer, we can't play, it's only a four-player game. And sure enough, he created a six-player scenario for us that was based around saving children at a children's hospital. And that is also available online if you want to. People can download and play that, and we have our video saved on Twitch and everything if you want to watch our go through with it, which thankfully Marcel was here to give us a helping hand a few times because we weren't doing so hot. But we saved the children in the end, and that's what's important. So thanks again for doing that. That was really cool and, of course, led to where we're at today here interviewing you guys. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, that's above and beyond and really speaks to without knowing you much at all, you know, who you are. So thank you.
It was a pleasure. In the past, I always reached out to different streamers like Alucard and Forged by Geeks and did, like, promotional things with them for Gloomhaven, and I just seen you play Gloomhaven, and you were the only stream playing Gloomhaven at that day, so I just hopped in and said hello and said to help you a bit out and yeah, do some promotional things for you too.
Well, and then Josh and I were doing a podcast at a different time, and that came up, and you happened to be watching, and I mentioned that I've owned Paradox for 25 years. My history is that I'm low vision. I've been blind in my left eye since birth. I started, you know, reading comic books and discovering D&D and all that kind of stuff in the 70s and 80s, and that led to opening the store eventually. But, you know, my disability and my store ownership and my fandom are all sort of wrapped up together, and I've recently become the fundraising chairman for the North Dakota chapter of the National Federation of the Blind, which I don't know anything about doing this job at all. So I know how to promote board games and comic books, but, you know, and so I thought, well, I'm going to go to what I know. I'm going to run some kind of gaming event that'll be a charity fundraiser, because I'm going to start in my own backyard and go from there, you know. And Marcel chimed in and said, oh, well, there That's is awesome. An event like that in Austria, right?
Yeah, that's a Don't Panic convention that is hosted every second year. That is featured in a Louis Bray house and is working on promoting charity for blind people. And also we, as I spoke on the other stream, designed board games for blind people so they can enjoy the hobby too.
Yeah, my goal is to... One of the big things about the blind community is something like 60% of the blind community is unemployed. And so I'm after empowerment. You know, I want to reach young kids who are having the experience that I had growing up, but I want to make a difference for them. I want them to know, you know, it's okay to be blind. It's okay to be, not only is it okay, they can be proud of themselves and they can do anything. And I want to find ways to do that. So I don't know how board gaming is going to lead me there yet, but, you know, I know who I am and what I believe in. And so that's, you know, the path that I'm sort of just beginning. So it was really cool to meet somebody like you who was willing to just design this campaign out of the kindness of your heart. That was great. So,
I said it was a pleasure.
All right. Well, we're starting to get close to the end of our time here, which is always a bummer. But, you know, I had a great idea that I'm going to share with you guys. This is $1 million idea, by the way. Here we go.
Is it for a Kickstarter game?
No. So you've seen, like, we're all familiar with the game Codenames, right? Mm-hmm. And there's, like, you know, how many different variants of that now? Mm-hmm. We need to get different variants for Gloomhaven, right? You mm-hmm. can have, like, an After Dark Gloomhaven adventure mm-hmm. manual and different scenarios, and you can have, like, different themed ones. Get, like, a Disney license or something in there. I'm telling you, this is...
I live in Gloomhaven.
I'm really glad that neither of you just hung up on me after that. That was...
I definitely have been approached by people who are like, oh, I really want like a Gloomhaven system for this. Mm-hmm. But you know, the main problem is just that it takes, you know, it's not like Codenames where I can just make a list of words and call it a day. It's right. It's a lot of work to, as Marcel can attest as well. It's a lot of work to create you know, the campaigns that go along with the games.
So I do have two questions. You know, and I was asking about, you know, how does a game stand out in that crowd? And I think I love your boldness. Like, well, I'm going to make it stand out, you know, because you look at a lot of those games that get released and you look at the artwork on the cover and things. And God bless everyone creating board games. That I shouldn't say this quite this way. But, I mean, but you can kind of tell sometimes that, you know, how, you know, or think to yourself, boy, you know, how's that game going to find an audience? And I mean, I'm not trying to be mean at all, right? And so I love the idea that you attacked it by, well, I'm going to make something that just stands out from the crowd. I'm sure everybody starts with that idea too, by the way. But one thing we find, and we interviewed Jerry Hawthorne earlier in the year, and he talked about how their company is approaching games as consumable. And so given how many games come out, given how much attention there is, or how much battling there is for everyone's attention, how do you think Gloomhaven will stand up over time? And sort of the second question is, well, that's my question. You know, how do you make Gloomhaven stand up over time when there's going to be a new Gloomhaven, you know, there's going to be a new attention getter any week, and there's going to be, like, Keyforge is out, and everybody's playing Keyforge, or, you know, so on and so forth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No. So yeah, I mean, to me, it's kind of scary, the idea of, like, making games as consumable, right? Like, just something that you might play once and then, you know, forget about it. And I definitely, yeah, see how the industry is sort of going in that direction, but I think Gloomhaven, in a sense, is almost like the antithesis of that, right? Where it's a game that ideally, you know, you have to invest, you know, a fair bit of money in getting it, and then once you have it, you've got to, you know, you've got to spend a lot of time with it, or at least that's the ideal way to play it. So, I don't know. I think if, you know, if the industry is moving in that direction, then I think Gloomhaven is always going to stand out as something apart from that.
Gloomhaven is not a game, it's a life choice.
Well, the other thing that comes up is there are a lot of, I'm going to cite Star Wars Destiny as an example. It's a very good card game, and it's got the Star Wars license and so on, right? So when it launched to today, and it's been around for, I don't know, a year and a half now, something like that. And when that launched from today, sales at most retailers that I know, our audience and our sales have dropped probably 75%. And the thing is, the quality of the game is fantastic. What we're finding from players is that they have so many things that they can do that by the time the next set comes out 3 or 4 months later, they have moved on to something else. And I guess that's more where my question goes is, and maybe this is just something you can't worry about as a creator, you know, but I think it's fascinating how you can fight that, you know, how you can deal with that problem in this marketplace.
It happens. People's attentions move away, but I think, you know, you just, there's also ways just to, you know, keep the game fresh and keep it in people's minds. So I mean, that's what expansions are for. That's why Forgotten Circles is coming out. One of the reasons why, you know, I run these community campaigns and stuff like that, you know, so, you know, there's always more content coming for Gloomhaven, and so you can always keep playing it.
Are there more copies of Gloomhaven coming? Is my other question.
Yes, that's also happening. But you know, yeah, I expect sales to drop off eventually. Like right now, obviously we're having trouble keeping up with the demands. You know, printing as many as we can, but you know, they take a while to print. So it, we're still not able to meet all the demand that's out there, but I, you know, eventually that all the people who want it will have it.
Well, yeah. And to be clear, my questions were not designed to put you in a corner or be negative. I was actually trying to set you up for, you know, this is what we do, you know? So I hope that makes sense. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, excuse me. There it was. But that's one thing that's really nice. So Forgotten Circles right now is at, you can pre-order it, and I believe the price is just $30 US.
Yes.
And there's how many more scenarios in there? There was 50-some?
22.
Oh, 22. Okay. I didn't mean to overshoot that. But 22
but
scenarios...
They're really great scenarios.
Yeah. Well, but 22 scenarios is easily...
Oh, that's
40,
amazing.
50 hours of content.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's great because Gloomhaven, it's one of those things where there's a bit of an investment in picking up. You get the base game, and there's a lot to play in there. And so you know, you play through it, you get through that eventually, and then to play more, the price goes down. And so, you know, where it's, you think of like a video game, right? We talked about video game RPGs. You get Final Fantasy 15 just came out. You play through that, and maybe there's 80 hours worth of content in there. And then you wait for a few years, and Final Fantasy 16 comes out. And to get that, you have to pay the same price, if not more, because all that stuff keeps going up. So that's one thing that's really cool, and I think helps will help the longevity of a game like Gloomhaven, is once you make that initial investment, getting more content for it is going to be fairly easy, at least easy on the pocketbook in that way, which is fantastic. So I think that helps a lot with that.
Especially when you count also in the solo scenarios and the community campaigns. Mm-hmm. You have like 30 scenarios of community campaigns, 17 scenarios of solo, and also a lot of custom creations by the community. There are over 150 scenarios of Gloomhaven by now.
Yeah, and it's something that encourages a community. And that's something that is very, very cool. Not to just sit here and fanboy at you guys. I didn't bring you on to just tell you how great you are, although you're great. But that's something that I think will help it stand out for longer than a number of other games that may hit the shelf and then kind of fade away. So, to finish up here, we've been having some good chat going on. I know, Marcel, you've been active in the chat here as well with our new friend Vice Versa. And he had a couple of questions I wanted to hit on to make sure that we got those in. I think you answered most of his questions in there, but he was looking in. Let's see. So he was saying between like the first and second printing, some classes got some nerfs and maybe some buffs. So he was wondering if there's any other classes, any other changes you might make in a future printing, or if the classes are pretty well where you want them at this point.
Let me think. I'm pretty happy. I think one thing we will do is with the new expansion, we're sort of introducing the idea of teleport, which is sort of like a specialized movement that, I don't know, is different in various ways. And some of the old classes had some abilities that kind of acted like a teleport before we actually had that key term. So I think with the expansion, we are going to be printing a couple cards for some of those classes just to update them with that keyword so it's a little more consistent. But other than that, I mean, I'm happy just leaving the classes as they are.
Maybe one thing would be from the design standpoint that you probably add the new idea of the separation lines between ability cards to a new printing just to clarify some issues that were in the past and make that clearer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that would be a good idea to go in and do the separation lines as well.
Excellent. And then another thing he was wondering is, with how much spoiler-sensitive stuff is in the game, obviously, you know, there's a good chance for people to spill secrets and all that sort of thing. So he was wondering how you managed to keep it so as well-guarded as you have.
I don't know. I mean, that's really the community. Mm-hmm. You know, they... sort of police each other, I guess, if you want to call it policing. But, you know, they just, like on Board Game Geek, you know, if somebody writes something that's spoilery, there'll be plenty of people who will chime in and, you know, tell them what's a spoiler and what isn't and how to properly handle that. Yeah, I don't know. It's really just the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good point there about the community and all of that, because I think as just kind of a general nerd society, we're pretty good about spoilers now. You know, you might still get a few people who want to try and ruin things for the others.
You're not in comic book retail. Like, that's absolutely not true at all. But maybe in games and somewhere you're in, but trust me.
Well, yeah, I mean, New York Times, was it, that spoiled the Batman Catwoman wedding? Yeah. Just awful. But yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I've noticed with, you know, legacy-type games and Gloomhaven, which isn't a legacy game but has, you know, revealable elements as you go, is that the community is pretty good about, you know, putting the spoiler tag on forums and making sure that they bury the comment a little bit so that people just passing by won't accidentally get it. And,
yeah.
So that's good. Oh, sorry, Rich. Go ahead.
No, my question is really not very off that topic, but we're going to be wrapping up. So I was just curious with Isaac. You seem to indicate that you kind of went to Kickstarter from the very beginning. Did you ever consider distribution? Did you ever consider shopping the game around to traditional publishers, or was that any, you know, like with Forge Wars, was that something you did? And do you feel like at this point, are you getting a financial reward that you're happy with? You know, I mean, I don't want numbers, so you know, nothing like that. I'm just curious how that went. How you made those decisions? So,
With Forge War, Kickstarter was almost just like a challenge to me. Like, it was kind of part of the draw of designing the game itself was just like, I want to try out like this Kickstarter thing and just see how it works. I mean, I did consider shopping around to publishers. I didn't actually do that at all, but I was sort of thinking, you know, at that time I was just some random person with like this big complicated Euro game. Like, you know, obviously Gloomhaven is giant, but I mean, Forge War for its time was also very heavy and lots of pieces. I think it weighs like 7 pounds, which is nowhere near Gloomhaven, but for like a standalone Euro, like, it's still pretty heavy.
Sure.
I didn't think anybody was going to be interested, and I didn't really know how to approach doing that anyway, so I just decided to try it out and publish it myself. And then Gloomhaven came along, and I don't know. I don't think there is a publisher who would publish that like without crowdfunding, just because it was so crazy at the time. Just in terms of the scope and then how big it is. I mean, and also just how big it is, like how expensive it is to produce. Like, you have sort of that factor of the unknown and the factor of it being so expensive. Like, it makes sense to put up on crowdfunding and let the audience decide like how much you print and whether it's worth printing at all. So that really just made the most sense to me. And of course now, I mean, we do have, go through normal distribution and all of that. Like, Cephal Affair is a legitimate company now that does its publishing and sends everything out through distribution. And I'm trying to move away from Kickstarter at this point. Like with Forgotten Circles, we're just doing a pre-order and not going through Kickstarter.
Yeah, that's one thing. Gloomhaven, I think, is a good example of what sort of thing should be on Kickstarter. Because you look at like that, and the other game that I pull into there is Too Many Bones. You know, with the way that that's put together and all the dice and the you can play the whole thing underwater because it's the way it's produced. You know, it's like that sort of thing. Yeah, most publishers aren't going to take the risk on, because especially before Gloomhaven existed, you know, there wasn't a proof of concept. This is a new thing. And so that's really, you know, like I said, that, I think that's the sort of thing, that's the reason Kickstarter exists. And so, yeah, I mean, that just makes sense to me to move it through those avenues.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we should probably draw it to a close for today. Guys, thank you again so much for joining us and for being patient with us as we dealt with the technical issues at the start of this whole thing. It's been awesome to get a chance to chat with you and just get to know you a little bit. And before we close out, why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit, tell us about where people can get Forgotten Circles or pre-order it, if there's any other sort of plugs you want to give in terms of where people can find you online and that sort of thing. So,
if you want them to.
If you want them to find you, yes.
Right, so yeah, definitely, if you're interested in Forgotten Circles, you should pre-order it. The website, I don't know if you guys can post that somewhere. I mean, if you go to cephalofair.com, you can find a link on the right side of the page to the pre-order. But yeah, and then I'm Cephalofair on Twitter. Twitter is my main social media thing that I use, so you can find me on there. Marcel?
Yeah, I don't have much of a media presence in a way. The most media presence we probably had with Cassandra, and Cassandra is our Twitter if you want to reach out for us. Cassandra's OpenAI. We hosted the community campaign, community reveal of Forgotten Circles, and if you have any questions, you can find me in Board Game Geek or reach out to me via PM there.
Or sometimes you can find him in the chat on our Twitch channel. That's a good place to catch it. Excellent. All right. Well, a little bit of housekeeping for us here. We are streaming live from Paradox Comics and Cards in Fargo, North Dakota. We record our podcasts live, as we are doing right now. Oftentimes, we'll do them in a block. We try to organize several in a row, but we get to do one-off ones like this as our guests are available and such. So we hope that you guys will follow us on Twitch. Paradox CNC, twitch.tv/ParadoxCNC, ParadoxCNC.com. We're on Facebook at Paradox CNC on Twitter, and Paradox CNC on Instagram. We release the podcast every Monday. This particular episode will come out, I believe, in 2 weeks, the Monday after this next one. So you can catch it there. And, yeah, we hope that you'll pop in for the live recording sessions.
Well, and you guys, you, Josh, have spearheaded. You guys are doing lots of game streaming, which, again, is how Marcel even stumbled across you in the first place. So,
right.
Live streams on Thursdays, playing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so every other Thursday night right now, starting in the new year, we are going to increase that to every Thursday night. We're going to be playing, and we're going to have a regular schedule. The second week of every month, so it'll be the second Thursday of every month, is going to be Gloomhaven. So we we decided we weren't getting through the box fast enough, so we had to dedicate time specifically to it. So check that out. We'd love it if you popped in and hung out with us. We're going to try to give you the best possible stream we can and continue to improve things as we go. Rich, any other store announcements or anything we need?
No, you did fantastic. Just thanks a lot to these guys for giving us their time. It was terrific. So
yeah, absolutely wonderful to chat with you guys, and hopefully we'll get to talk with you more in the future. But
I need to travel to gaming conventions and things like that and meet people in person. I mean,
and
we've
take
interviewed
me with you.
Yeah, and take you with me. Yeah. We've interviewed Renegade Games, we've interviewed Jerry Hawthorne and these guys and Kenny Keith Baker,
Eric Royce,
like a really cool list of people under our belts, but we never meet them in person. Well, you met, you know, but I mean, you know, we're not meeting them in person and making those kinds of connections. So
yeah, you can probably meet Isaac regularly in the USA and different conventions, and yep. You could meet me and Isaac probably next year at Essen again.
That's yeah. We need to go to Essen, travel across the
ocean. I know people who go, so, you know, they get packed up in one of their suitcases. So.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. We're going to go ahead and end the podcast for now. But I encourage everyone, of course, to check out Suffle Affair Games. Check out Gloomhaven, Founders of Gloomhaven, Forge War. And, until then, we'll see you on the DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clock's cast. Until next time, geek on.